sing. It's another Comic-Con thing. It's another ever-loving blue-eyed Comic-Con.
Time for the fates of the Hollywood big breasts to be decided by guys dressed like Kick-Ass.
Zing! It's another Comic-Con. Softly sleeping studio heads, waking suddenly from their beds, desperately screaming in a sweat. Who do we pander to for cred? You! At another Comic-Con!
Dude. Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. I'm Mike DiCriscio, and joining me, as always, is a person who has better intros than I do.
Mike Smith.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm good. I would say my intros are not better, they are just different than
Differently abled. It's fine.
Differently abled is exactly how I would describe my intros. How are you doing today, Mike? This is your one day of the year to introduce the podcast.
Yes. Yes. It's that time of year again. I get to wear the podcast host hat, and I'm very excited. It's also my first episode recording with a not piece of garbage mic.
Right.
So that all – I mean microphone. You're not a piece of garbage.
Ouch.
Ever. Slam. Got him.
Man.
Yeah, but it is that time of year where we do our Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con recap episode.
Yes,
and
it is.
Here we are.
Yes. So, yeah, I was at New York Comic-Con last weekend. We were going to record this a few days ago, but after Comic-Con, I got terribly, terribly sick.
Yes, I was sympathetically ill with you.
Right.
We were both sick on the same week for some reason.
Yeah, you had a hysterical con sickness or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Hysterical pregnancy or something, right?
When yeah, sure.
yeah, so after Comic, like, it was Saturday during the con. I could feel the sore throat like coming on. I could feel it like building up inside. And then Sunday, I was just completely dead. So I ended up skipping Sunday at New York Comic Con. Ended up like going back. And you know, my thing is, I had an Airbnb that was like 45 minutes away from the Javits Center. From a subway mm-hmm. ride. So I had to take my subway back to Penn Station, I think, and then I had to take another subway back to Grand Central. So it took me like an hour and a half to get back to Grand Central and then a train ride home. So it was like a 3-hour trek.
And well, I was just deliriously ill.
Yeah, I was completely dead the entire time. I was burning up and sweating, and it was profusely disgusting to be around me.
So you fit right in on the subway then.
Exactly, yeah. The worst part was Saturday night, after I'd done all my panels and stuff, I was going home, I was going back to the Airbnb, I was starting to feel a little bit sick, but I wasn't going to be that bad. I think what really pushed me over the limit of sickness is that I got on the subway, and then the subway abruptly stopped in between stations.
You texted me about this, I remember.
And we were stuck there for 2 hours.
Just chilling.
Yeah, 2 hours in a packed subway car, filled with other con people.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to get home. I'm glad I wasn't like supposed to do anything that night. Like I wasn't like trying to meet up with somebody because I had no way of reaching them because there was no Wi-Fi in the subway. So I was just stuck there from like 9 to 11, and then finally they let us out at the next stop because there was some kind of red light that wouldn't let them continue. They never told us why that red light was going on or whatever.
Never. They'll never tell you, Mike.
So they finally let us out at the next stop, which was like maybe 3 stops from where I was originally. So I didn't get very far. And I had to take an Uber back to
Jesus.
Brooklyn. And that took like another 45 minutes, cause of all the city traffic and stuff. So, and I ended up not getting back into the apartment until like 1 a.m. And then the next day I was just incredibly ill. And I blame the New York subway system, more than I blame Calicon.
Yeah, that seems fair. Welcome to New York, doing commuter stuff.
Yes.
But let's flash back, Mike.
Yeah, the listeners aren't here to hear me complain about the New York subway system.
Stay tuned for our subway podcast follow-up after this.
Yes.
But let's flash back from Saturday night where you become deliriously ill to Thursday, day one, New York Comic Con.
Yes.
What happens? Tell me about it.
Day one of New York Comic Con. This is my fourth year covering Comic-Con for Film Book, so I've pretty much got it, you know, locked and ready to go. I know what I'm doing at this point.
You're a professional.
I'm a professional, yes. And so this year, I feel like the panels that they had actually at the Javits Center weren't as big as they were in years past, because so much of the big ones are at Madison Square Garden and Hammerstein Ballroom. We talked about this last year, how a lot of them are just moving outside the Javits Center. But that was really felt this year. Like, if you looked at the main stage panels, there's a lot that was like, man, that wouldn't have been on the main stage like 3 years ago, but it is now. but there were a few panels, at least a few panels each day that I was interested in. I got to see, three panels each day, and the first day, the first thing I went to was the Tara Strong spotlight. Are you familiar with Tara Strong, Mike?
Yeah, she's one of the well-renowned voice actresses.
Yes, and I am a voice acting geek, to say the least. I'm a big fan of voice acting and that whole art form. I've always been really fascinated by that. So this is pretty cool. Tara Strong is the woman behind several iconic animated characters like Timmy Turner from The Fairly Odd Parents, Bubbles from Powerpuff Girls, Raven from Teen Titans, and judging from how many bronies were in the audience, she's pretty popular on My Little Pony as well.
Yeah, that seems fair.
So this is pretty cool. There was like a short interview with the moderator, which gave way to like a pretty lengthy Q&A session from the audience. And as is normally the case with these things, like the questions were like pretty hit or miss. I think one of my biggest pet peeves at Comic-Con is when somebody goes up to the mic and says, like, hey, I just wanted to say I'm a really big fan. Like, A, obviously, you're a really big fan. You are there. And, and then they follow it up with, like, it's an honor to speak to you here at New York Comic Con. And it's like, it's an honor to speak to you? Like, what?
Really?
What? Huh? They're not the Pope. Like, what do you...
Yeah, but they're the voice of my favorite pony, Mike.
But Tara Strong is always like a pro. She's like fielding questions with sincerity, with humor, and of course by busting out her voices. She particularly likes to use the Harley Quinn voice a lot. She's a big fan of using that one.
Poor Dr. Young. Still, you know how Mr. J hates the squealers. Talking about squealers.
Oh, somebody help me.
That old loony actually thinks he runs this place. Talk about crazy! Well, bad places to go! Get him, boys! If he gets up, knock him down, but not too rough. Mr. J needs him at the park.
That's what I was going to say. I think she's most well known as, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe most well known to me is Harley Quinn.
Yeah, I suppose so. For me, Harley Quinn was always Arlene Sorkin, who voiced it in the original animated series. And then I think also voiced Harley Quinn in Arkham Asylum. And then after that, Tara Strong took over on those games and has voiced Harley Quinn a lot in other things. She also voiced, actually, I think in the original animated series, she voiced Batgirl in that one. Or at least she did Batgirl at some point. I'm not sure exactly when. But yeah, so she spoke with a surprising like candidness about the voice acting industry, how it's getting more difficult with the rise of projects voiced by big celebrities, and how odd it can be to re-audition for your own part, as was the case with the new Powerpuff Girls.
She didn't get it, if I remember right.
Right. So I think what happened was there was a TV movie that Cartoon Network made like a couple years ago, which was a Powerpuff Girls thing, and it had the original cast. And then that, like, led into this new Powerpuff Girls TV series, and it's all new voices. And so she made a lot of jokes about that and, like, how, like, you know, she was secretly kind of pissed off about it. But, you know, she was, like, it felt like she was joking, but at the same time, like,
but maybe not.
Maybe not. Yeah. So as far as news goes, the panel was pretty light. I wrote down that there was a My Little Pony special, which was airing this past weekend, which Tara Strong was mentioning, and I guess it came out on Friday. Turns out, it was actually a movie that opened up in theaters. I had no idea.
Top reporting.
I was doing my box office reporting for a film book, and they came in like fourth of the box office, and I was like, wait, My Little Pony the movie? That's a theatrical thing? Like, what? Yeah, and then I went to the movies yesterday to go see Blade Runner, and it was sold out, so I went to go see My Little Pony. No, it's...
what a twist!
But I saw it like playing nearby, actually, and it was like, oh, that's weird. Okay, so I guess that's a real thing. My Little Pony, man, made a comeback. Everything I've heard is that it's a very good version of My Little Pony, but I'm not going to watch whatever this My Little Pony is.
We'll take that person's account for it. We're not going to do it ourselves.
Exactly. So that is the Tara Strong voice acting panel. For anybody who is really interested in voice acting, this was a really cool hour. And then after that, went to the main stage for the Michael Rooker spotlight, Mike. I've been a big fan of Michael Rooker for many years. You know, he's been a character actor forever, right? He's been in so many things. Mallrats and Slither alone, those two things are enough to put him in my Geek Hall of Fame. But then you throw in The Walking Dead as Merle and Guardians of the Galaxy as Yondu. Like, baby, you got yourself a stew going. That's just...
what 1930s detective novel did you just walk out of? What the
hell was that? That's an Arrested Development line.
that makes it even better. Oh, my God.
I gotta tell you, this is probably one of the best panels I went to this entire week. No amount of Michael Rooker fandom could have prepared me for this, like, totally nuts, off-the-wall panel that broke all the rules of Comic-Con.
Is that just on the sheer charisma and beauty that is Michael Rooker, or did like other crazy shit happen?
A lot of that is the sheer charisma and beauty of Michael Rooker. So in the 4 years that I've been covering New York City Comic Con, I've been to, you know, countless panels, almost all of them with a couple people at a table with a moderator. The moderator asks a few questions, then it turns to the fans who do the Q&A, and the Q&A is always the worst.
it's always an honor to speak to them.
Yeah, it's always an honor to speak to them. So that idea clearly bored Michael Rooker. Who came out, like, you know, at first the moderator came out, was introducing the panel. He, I forgot the guy's name, but he wrote a book about The Walking Dead called Guts, which Michael Rooker did an interview for. And so he came out, introduced Michael Rooker. Michael Rooker runs on stage and throws a bag across the stage, like, immediately.
Okay.
And then, like, you know, he's doing his interview with the interviewer. He's just making fun of the interviewer the entire time, just constantly poking fun. And, you know, they keep, like, making reference to the fact, like, there's a clock with a timer, like, running down. Like, it's an hour-long panel, so there's a timer in the front that, like, tells you how much time you have left. And so they keep pointing to it and, like, making fun of the fact that they don't have that much time left, or, like, they have, like, 45 minutes left, and they're just, like, counting down, like, 45, 44, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the interviewer just kind of went along with it, like, quickly threw any attempt to keep things on track out the window. And then after, like, 5 minutes, instead of doing, you know, the usual Q&A, like, where people line up on the sides and talk into microphones, Michael Rooker just jumped into the crowd and started his own Q&A.
Okay.
So he just grabbed a microphone and just shouted, like, so does anybody have questions? And, like, you know, tons of people's hands go up, and he's just running around the room, like, putting microphones in people's hands, and they ask a quick question, and he'll just say, like, really quick answers. And he did that for, like, the entire hour.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so he quickly made his way around the entire main stage auditorium, like, several times over. Every, like, rapid-fire question that came to him, he added, like, a rapid-fire response. No news to offer at this panel. Mm-hmm.
Seems like it.
Yeah. And, you know, he didn't need to have news. Like, it's kind of crazy. Like, a few years ago, it would seem insane that, you know, an actor like Michael Rooker would have a spotlight on the main stage of New York Comic Con. But he's got such a high profile from The Walking Dead and Guardians of the Galaxy, and especially Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where Yondu had such a huge spotlight that people were, like, enthralled.
What? You look like Mary Poppins.
Is he cool?
Hell yeah, he's cool.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all!
You know, he was just, like, running around the room, and some people would be like, hey, are you going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy 3? And he'd just be like, no, and then he'd run around to the other side.
Yeah, and that is a good example of something that would have been in a smaller auditorium even last year, but now that they have all these outside venues that they, sure, put it on the main stage.
Exactly. And that was awesome. And then at the end of the panel, he actually called James Gunn on his cell phone.
Okay.
And he put it on speaker, and he got the voicemail, but it was definitely James Gunn. Like, you could hear his voice, and he was like, hey, mm-hmm. James Gunn, leave a message or whatever. And so he had the crowd just leave, like, a really loud and, like, indecipherable voicemail for James Gunn.
That's amazing.
Great. And then he led the crowd at the end in shouting, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all, as he filmed it.
So Michael Rooker just does whatever he wants for an hour.
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty evident that, like, he was soaking up his moment in the spotlight, right? Because he's been working for, like, 30 years. He's been part of, like, some big movies. You know, he was in JFK. He was in Cliffhanger. He was his first movie was Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, where he was the main character in that movie. And, you know, he's been all over the place for so long, but now, like, you know, he's kind of having this moment as of right now with Walking Dead and Guardians of the Galaxy. People are just really into him, and so I think he's making the most out of everything he got out of that. So that was this was a really cool panel to go see, especially if you're a fan of Michael Rooker. And if you weren't a fan of Michael Rooker, then why would you be at this panel? But
then you've made a grave mistake.
And then finally, my last panel for Thursday was one that I was pretty excited about. This one's called Harmon Quest, the screening and Q&A. So, Mike, as you know, I'm a longtime fan of comedy writer Dan Harmon.
I do know that.
Creator of Community, one of my favorite shows of all time, and Rick and Morty, one of the best shows currently on TV. And I know you're a huge fan of Dungeons and Dragons, so...
What gave it away? Was it the end of every episode? Or anything else about me?
Exactly.
But yes, that is correct.
Have you watched Harmon Quest at all?
I watched the first episode of season one because it was for free on YouTube. But I don't have CISO.
Yeah,
okay.
I do have CISO. Yeah, I paid the $4 a month. I will no longer
look at Mr. Moneybags.
I will no longer be doing that because CISO is dead now. Long live CISO. So Harmony Quest aired on CISO the first season, and now season two is airing on a new streaming service because CISO is dead, called Verve. Which is spelled VRV, which is dumb.
And, well, Verve, V-E-R-V-E is a band, I think.
Yes, The Verve is a band.
The Verve.
Yes. It's a bittersweet symphony, Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I'm saying that VRV, pronouncing that Verve, is dumb. Because,
fair.
Like, you use your vowels. Like, what do you do?
Come on.
But anyway, so Harmon Quest was kind of a spinoff of Harmon Town, in which Dan Harmon and his friends would play Dungeons & Dragons every week. And this is like a pretty cool show. It's a show I enjoyed a lot in season one. The hardcore fans were here. Basically Dan Harmon was here. Comedian Jeff Davis from Whose Line It Is Anyway and the co-host of Harmontown, he was here. Podcaster Erin McGathy was not there, but she was, you know, present in the episode that we saw. And Dungeon Master Spencer was there. And they all played, you know, an improvised game of Dungeons & Dragons in the episode that we saw, as usual, with a special guest joining them each week. That the guest that was shown in the episode was Patton Oswalt. So the episode that was shown was Season 2, Episode 5. And I haven't watched any of Season 2. I guess it's been airing for a couple of weeks on Verve. It's weird. Like, CISO, the entire season dropped at once. I guess this one's putting it out weekly. They showed the first episode, the fifth episode of this new season. And it was funny. You know, it was a usual episode of Harmon Quest. I don't think it was as good as some of the best ones I've seen. It's not, like, the Kumail Nanjiani episode from the first season is probably my favorite one. That one's pretty great.
And I just pull down my orc pants. I have been gay my whole half-orc life. I didn't know until a couple of episodes ago. Sex. It can happen between anyone out there. Yes! You said yes, so...
Okay.
So I pull down. I pull down his cobalt pants.
And it goes, oh, what is this? I'm trying to get away. No! I don't know if that's how you're supposed to do what we just did. I don't think there is any supposed to, except in here. Out there, everything is free, and that's the world we're defending. So help us. If we die, you'll never leave here. Can I say something? You just give me 70 gold to give me a hand job.
But there's a lot to like for fans of the show. Patton Oswalt's very funny, and there's plenty of self-deprecating Dan Harmon in the episode, which is always a good time. You know, some great, like, stammering improv, and and there's this terrific running gag about half-finished idioms, where where a character, or, like, somebody will say, like, where there's a will, and then not finish the sentence kind of thing.
That's amazing.
So it was pretty good. So they screened that episode, and then that was followed by a Q&A with Dan Harmon, Jeff Davis, and Spencer, moderated by another one of your favorite podcasts, Mike, Travis McElroy from My Brother and Me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's all of my favorite things in one thing.
Exactly. I actually wrote in my Comic-Con review of for day one, my film book cast co-host, Mike Scricchio, would have flipped the fuck out.
But, you know me so well.
Yeah. So they talked a bit about, you know, the process of adapting the podcast to TV before opening up to audience questions, which amazingly stayed mostly on topic. Usually when you have Dan Harmon in a room, people are asking about so much other stuff because he has so much other stuff going on. It only drifted off to Rick and Morty once.
Impressed.
Which is surprising. Like, Rick and Morty had just finished the previous week. His season. So that was kind of surprising. And Harmon kind of declared that he won't be finished with the show until he's convinced that everyone is sick of it. So
That's, so it'll be a while.
It'll be a little while, yeah. So they spoke at length about some of their favorite episodes. The Aubrey Plaza episode was mentioned a couple of times in season one, for good reason, because that one's great. And Dan Harmon had a surprisingly in-depth philosophical discussion with an 11-year-old.
That's the most Dan Harmon sentence that's ever been said.
The kid mentioned that he was trying to be an engineer or something, and so Dan Harmon just asked him, like, "So, do you believe the singularity will happen when Elon Musk is saying it will?" And the kid is responding back with like kind of intelligent answers, and then Dan Harmon asked him, like, "Do you believe that we're all in a simulation?" And the kid's like, "Well, if you have to ask, then aren't you already in the simulation?" And Dan Harmon just like freaks out. It was pretty great. So yeah, got weird, got off topic, much like an episode of Community or Rick and Morty or Harmon Quest. I was surprised nobody asked about the Community movie that could potentially happen. That's still, I guess, that flame has kind of died down a little bit. But you know, it was a good panel nonetheless, and a good one to close out the day. So that wraps up day one of New York Comic Con, Mike.
Well, I have a question. Did you spend, I guess we don't want to spend too much time in this episode, just in general, because sure. We could be here forever to talk about everything at New York Comic Con. But besides those three panels, did you spend time on the show floor, Alley?
Yeah.
Any crazy standout stuff happening?
I was on the show floor for a while throughout the weekend. I actually spent most of day two on the show floor because I was wandering around aimlessly for a long time. But yeah. I mean,
just in life, you know.
In life and in Comic Con, they're one and the same. I spent some time on the show floor. I spent a little time in Artist Alley, but not much. It was completely crowded, and like I don't like purchase people's art anyway, so it's
fair. Yeah, that's fair.
That's a lot of dollars. I've walked around the show floor for a while. There's some cool stuff. Actually, I'll talk about this for day two, but there was a Star Wars experience. There was a big Star Wars The Last Jedi booth that I explored for a little bit, so I'll talk about that in a few minutes. I don't think I really spent too much. I mean, I wandered around aimlessly on the show floor. There was cool stuff. There was a South Park booth with people trying to win t-shirts by doing South Park trivia, where if they lost, this gigantic Randy would spray member berry juice on them.
God damn it.
So there's that. And, you know, there's the usual kind of big booths. Topps had a big booth, and Marvel had a booth and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, I got a couple of Blu-rays from Magnet releasing at their booth. I got Hobo with a Shotgun, and I Saw the Devil. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very good picks.
Yes, thank you. And I got a free t-shirt out of it, too. So, yeah.
There you go.
All right. So,
Let's move on into day two. It's Friday. You're still feeling not sick. You're still healthy. Things are looking up for Mike Smith.
Exactly. Yeah. So day two of New York Comic Con, I decide, hey, I'll go to Madison Square Garden because there's a panel I wanted to go see at around noon. But before that, there's another panel that I figured, I might as well just go for the hell of it. So the panel I went to for the hell of it is the Peter Capaldi Spotlight. Now, Peter Capaldi, for those of you who don't know, is a guy who played Doctor Who, or I guess is currently playing Doctor Who, up until like this coming Christmas special, and that'll be his final episode. So I came into this as a bit of an outsider because I have never watched Doctor Who.
So this is really a just for the hell of it thing, then.
Yeah. However, I am a big fan of Peter Capaldi from the movie In the Loop, which is the movie directed by Armando Iannucci, who created Veep, also created The Thick of It, with stars Peter Capaldi.
Come on, Malcolm, he asked me for a personal opinion.
But why didn't you say? I mean, he asked you. Fuck, of course that explains it. Yeah. See, if he'd asked you to fucking black up, or to give him your PIN number, or to shit yourself, would you have done that as well?
I would have blacked up, because it was radio. Nobody would have known.
Very good, yeah.
Well, war is basically unforeseeable, isn't it?
That is not our line. Walk the fucking line. Look, we've got Cannon Clark over from Washington today.
Okay.
We've got enough fucking Pentagon goons here to stage a fucking coup d'etat.
Minister?
Not the time, love. I'm busy. Fuck off.
This is Toby.
Toby, hi. Glad you could make it. Yes. It's a bit of an odd morning here.
Yes.
Welcome to the madhouse. I apologise for Malcolm.
Don't apologise for me. Apologise for yourself. Did I not just tell you to fuck off and yet you're still here?
It's true. I am, yes, still here.
Hey, fetus boy, lesson one. I tell you to fuck off, what do you do?
F off.
You'll go far. Well, fuck off.
And yeah, I'm pretty sure I had never seen like a single frame of Peter Capaldi's Doctor Who until until Friday. The panel began with a short sizzle reel showcasing Capaldi's time as Doctor Who before giving way to an interview followed by a Q&A with Capaldi in person. So that sizzle reel represented pretty much my entire knowledge of Doctor Who. I was getting it as it happened.
Real time Doctor Who.
Exactly. So it was clearly like a somewhat emotional experience for some of the fans in the room. I guess Capaldi's tenure as the Doctor is ending with the upcoming Christmas special, where he's going to be replaced with Jodie Whittaker from Attack the Block,
right.
Which is awesome. That's a cool replacement. And Capaldi has done a lot of work outside of Doctor Who, like In the Loop and The Thick of It, where he portrayed Malcolm Tucker, the iconic and foul-mouthed political figure. And he shot down any chance of a resurgence of The Thick of It when he was there. He noted that politics aren't really that funny anymore.
But, too true.
But he did mention that he is working with Armando Iannucci again on his next film. But he couldn't say any more than that. And actually, Iannucci's current film, The Death of Stalin, has been getting great reviews and it's going to be released pretty soon. So on the Doctor Who front, Capaldi only revealed that his Doctor isn't particularly keen on regenerating and that he'll receive some help from the first Doctor, played by David Bradley from Game of Thrones and Harry Potter. So there's that, and the panel ended with another sizzle reel of fans expressing how much Capaldi's Doctor Who means to them, and it was clearly a very touching farewell for both the fans and the audience, and Capaldi himself.
Oh, how sweet.
Yeah.
Very nice. So what followed your Peter Capaldi Doctor Who? I'm so excited by the fact that that's your one and only experience or exposure to Doctor Who is a farewell panel. That's hilarious. That's the best thing ever.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I was hoping, like, I guess I didn't really realize it was a Doctor Who specific panel. I assumed it was just
right.
A Peter Capaldi in general kind of panel, but it really was a Doctor Who. It was a Doctor Who. So yeah, that is my exposure to Doctor Who. I probably won't watch it. That sounds like a lot of work. But the panel that I really wanted to go see, Mike, which is why I was at Madison Square Garden, was a Pacific Rim Uprising.
We were born into a world at war. Between the monsters that destroyed our cities and the monsters we created to stop them, we thought we had sacrificed enough. But the war we thought we finished is just beginning. And the only thing standing in front of the apocalypse is us.
You're goddamn right.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim. And though I was excited for a continuation of that universe, I was still like, a little bummed that Del Toro would not be the one to keep that story going.
Right.
You know, so I was I'm interested in Pacific Rim Uprising. It's a project I've been watching, you know, with bated breath. And then I saw I had a panel in New York Comic Con, knew I had to check it out. So the panel included director Stephen Esten Knight, who has mostly worked in television on shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Spartacus, and Daredevil. Actress Kaylee Spaney, returning actor Bern Gorman, and newcomers Scott Eastwood. And John Boyega was there, Mike. That was pretty cool. From a little-known sci-fi franchise called Star Wars. Maybe you've heard of it.
You know, I have to think about it for a minute.
Yeah, that's you know, one of those obscurities you see on TCM Underground. Like that's
at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. So the panel itself was fairly standard. It revealed like a little bit about the world of the sequel. It takes place 10 years after the original. It's an attempt at building on that world while honoring what the trailer did, etc. And that all led up to the world premiere of the trailer, which was released online a few minutes beforehand. It was weird. I was scrolling through Twitter during the panel, and they kept saying during the panel, like, oh, we're gonna have the world premiere of this trailer coming up in a few minutes. And I was like, oh, cool. And then I was like, just before the trailer like was screened, I was like looking through Twitter and I saw the trailer was like online, and I was like, oh, all right.
Whoops. Somebody hit publish 5 minutes too early.
Yeah, exactly. So have you watched the Pacific Rim Uprising trailer, Mike, now that it's online?
I have not. In my unsullied ways, I still am trying to avoid going out of my way to watch trailers.
Fair.
So I'm sure I'll see it in the next movie I see, yeah. Whatever it might be. But yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. Yeah, I think it looks like it could be cool. But I'm still interested in it. But I can't shake the feeling that it's like a pretender to Del Toro's throne in its in its weird way.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like the trailer loses like a sense of scale that Del Toro brought to it. But I mean, John Boyega in Pacific Rim, like I'm there, like hell yes. So
yeah.
We'll see how it turns out when it is released on March 2018. And then the panel ended with Charlie Day, who sent a video of himself testing out potential theme songs for Pacific Rim Uprising. and I hereby demand that all panels end this way because it is the best.
Just with Charlie Day doing fake theme songs, or
yeah, it's just him at a piano, like singing like, you know, random songs, and he's just singing like Pacific Rim with Charlie Day. And others, like the guy from Star Wars. Yeah,
that's perfect.
I was honestly shocked he didn't do Dayman just so he could play the hits. Like it was,
that would have been the best.
It was pretty great. But anyway, so yeah, that was the Pacific Rim Uprising panel. And then I spent a lot of the day just kind of wandering around for a while. And I'll talk a little bit about the Star Wars experience since I did that.
Yes.
So there was big Star Wars The Last Jedi booth at the back of the Comic-Con show floor, and there's a big line around it. I didn't really know what exactly the line was for, but I was like, oh, check it out. And it seemed like, you know, it was going to be like they'll show a couple of props or costumes from the movies and stuff, but then somebody was like, no, it's actually like this it's called the Star Wars Experience. You go in and they do a little, like, sort of reenactment or show or something. So I was like, I'm a little confused as to what this is, but sure. So I waited online for like an hour thinking I was going to get in. But when you get when you get to the front, they put you in a virtual line.
What? What is the difference between that and a real line?
Basically, you give them your phone number, and then they will text you when you have to show up for the Star Wars experience. So they text. So you get a text. I got a text like 2-3 hours later, and it said,
"Jesus Christ!"
Yeah, and it said, "Be back here. Be back to the Star Wars booth in 15 minutes." To get the Star Wars experience, or you will forfeit your spot in line. And I was like, oh, shit.
Wow.
So I finally got back to the Star Wars The Last Jedi booth after an overall 4 hours of waiting. And the Star Wars experience was pretty cool. You go in, and there's, like, props and costumes from The Last Jedi. You see, like, some blasters and, you know, some Stormtrooper uniforms and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing, like, you know, there's no, like, spoilery props or anything like that. You don't see, like, I don't know, Darth Vader's severed head or something, but you have, like, but you're wandering around for a little bit. And what they did beforehand was they took your picture. And then when you get inside, as you're wandering around for a few minutes, suddenly like alarms start going off and one person's picture gets like plastered on like screens. And so it's like wanted by the First Order kind of thing. And so like, there's
a
group who's like wanted by the First Order. And like guys dressed as stormtroopers come out and are like flanking around looking for this one person. And then Kylo Ren comes out and it's a guy dressed as Kylo Ren. And you know, you hear like the force music, like the evil music playing and stuff like that. And then like a resistance trooper comes out and is like, oh, you gotta come with me. And then Kylo Ren like uses the force choke and the guy like flies up into the air. He's like on the wall. So he's like, flies up into the air and then falls back down. Another resistance trooper comes out and he like uses force and that person goes like flying. And then, Kylo Ren walks away and then BB-8 rolls out and that's the end of it.
BB-8 saves the day.
Yeah.
Like in everything else.
So it was kind of cool. Like it wasn't worth like the lengthy wait for it, but you know, it's like 2 minutes long. It was a cool little thing, you know, fun. And then after that, I went to the Hammerstein Ballroom for my last panel of the day, which was the Family Guy panel.
Besides, this place is paradise.
Sure is. Except for Randy Newman.
Randy Newman?
Yep. Just sits there all night and day, singing about what he sees.
Fat man with his kids and dog. Drove in through the morning fog. Hey there, Rover. Come on over.
Wow, it's nice to have music while we eat.
Red-headed lady, reaching for an apple. Gonna take a bite. Nope. She gonna breathe on it first. Wipe it on her blouse. She takes a bite, chews it once, twice, three times, four times. Stops. Saliva working. Take the long, hard look at Randy. Five times. Fat old husband walking over.
Let's get the hell out of here.
Now.
What? So why? You went to the Family Guy panel?
I did, yeah. I mean, there wasn't really much else going on. And, you know, now entering its 16th season on Fox, this was Family Guy's first year at New York Comic Con, so I thought it might be kind of cool. Panel was packed, and it was clearly full of, like, hardcore Family Guy fans, so, like, the worst people in the world.
Slam.
That's a joke. Don't email me angrily, Family Guy fans. I'll be honest, I have not watched Family Guy regularly since I was in high school, so it's been a really long time. But there was a time when I was like really into Family Guy. I was like obsessed with it for a few years. And we were shown an upcoming episode from this new season, which was actually pretty good. It was a pastiche of three different directors telling the same Family Guy story of Peter getting fired from his job. So one segment was in the style of Quentin Tarantino, one was in the style of Wes Anderson, and one was in the style of Michael Bay. and so if you're any kind of like film geek, there's some decent gags in here, and strictly through that like random Family Guy lens. And the episode also included the voice talents of Carrie Fisher and Adam West, both of whom played significant recurring characters on the show, and obviously both have died in a while. Actually, I believe this was Carrie Fisher's last episode that she had recorded. And Adam West apparently is still in a lot of this upcoming season. Like he still has like 15 episodes to go before he's done. So that's cool at least. But afterwards, a panel came out that included Mike Henry, who plays Cleveland on the show, Alex Borstein, who plays Lois, Patrick Warburton, who plays Joe, and Seth Green, who plays Chris. And Seth MacFarlane could not be there in person because he was working on the Orville, but he appeared for the Q&A via Skype. I'm pretty sure the plan was for Seth MacFarlane to be there because the Orville also had a panel at New York Comic Con right before Family Guy.
Right.
So it's weird that, like, you know, they would have both of these things and Seth MacFarlane would not be there. But honestly, so he appeared via Skype. And honestly, the Skyping was a little awkward. Like, we could see MacFarlane, but he could not see us. And there was definitely, like, a bit of delay on his end as well. But the panel was pretty funny throughout. Alex Borstein especially is throwing out dirty jokes left and right and, you know, fired off a ton of jokes that at best were in bad taste. But we're pretty funny, so it evens out. And that was day two of New York Comic Con, man. That wraps up my second day on the job, on the scene at New York Comic Con.
Yes, the sun sets on Healthy Mike for the last time.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
So I have just a general question. I know we probably talked about this last year also because they had these off-site venues, but
sure.
What do you feel or how do you feel about having to trek the, you know, 7 or 8 or it's probably not that many actually. what is it like 4 or 5 long avenue blocks in between Javits Center and Madison Square Garden? That's a pretty decent walk, you know, and to wait online for panels to go into the garden. You know, there's a lot of time wasted in transit, I would assume.
Yeah, dude, it's fucking exhausting. I mean, this is year 4 I'm doing this, like, and I remember my first year, like, I was, you know, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I was like, yeah, let's go do various things. But in my first year, it was pretty much all in the Javits Center. And then the second year, like, there was a couple of things, like, here and there. I'm pretty sure my second year there, the only one that was in the Hammerstein was Ash vs. Evil Dead that I went to go see. And then last year, I remember just being like, wow, everything is off-site. And this year, it was like, wow, everything is off-site. Like, it's exhausting. And, you know, it's like almost a mile from the Javits Center to the Hammerstein Ballroom. And then it's a little further to Madison Square Garden. And so it's, you know, you're going back and forth, like, in the entire day. And, you know, it's not like it's just you walking in the streets. It's like huge crowds of humans.
Right. Yeah.
Walking back and forth. So it does get exhausting. And yeah, by the end of like Friday, I was beat, and then I had Saturday and Sunday to go, and it was, you know.
That's all I had. I was wondering, you know, I was curious about that. But how do you think that affects it? If there is an effect on Comic-Con, I don't know if that it's slowly expanding to take over more and more of Manhattan every year.
Yeah. And I mean, that's cool. Like, that's a cool thing. But also, I would rather it was all in one place, just so I can get there so much easier. You know, expand the Javits Center or something if you have to. Like, they're not going to expand it just for one thing. But yeah, like, there used to be, when I was there, my first and second year, there was, like, the main stage and there was the Empire stage at the Javits Center. So there was, like, two, like, pretty major stages there. And then they got rid of the Empire stage and changed it to, like, a different thing. This year was Artist Alley. Last year was, like, a virtual reality thing. So I don't know. I feel like they could pack more stuff into the Javits Center and they just refuse to, and it's very upsetting.
Yeah. I did hear that they're adding capacity and building new wings and all this stuff to the Javits Center to make it more, suitable to what Comic-Con has become or is becoming. So hopefully they get that done soon. 'Cause that whole area, that whole Hudson Yards part of Manhattan is like up and coming and blowing up right now, being gentrified. but yeah, so hopefully they're able to get some more capacity in there.
Yeah,
but hopefully. Let's move on. The sun rises Saturday morning.
Yes.
You feel but a tickle at the back of your throat.
Yes.
A mere foreshadowing of what's to come later on.
Indeed. Yeah. So it's Saturday morning. This is day three, my last day at New York Comic Con. And so this one, kind of interesting, because so Madison Square Garden is the big place to be today. And there's a lot of panels throughout the day. But there was a sudden cancellation a couple days beforehand. I don't know if you heard about this, Mike. The Punisher was supposed to have a panel in New York Comic Con this year.
I don't think I heard that.
Okay, yeah. The Punisher, the upcoming Netflix show with Jon Bernthal spinning off of Daredevil, that was supposed to have a panel right before The Walking Dead's panel. And it was canceled after the Las Vegas shooting. So Marvel like pulled it right after that, which totally makes sense. Some people were upset about it, but I was like, I don't really care. And that totally is fine. Like that's
yeah.
You know, makes total sense to me. So what happened at the Madison Square Garden was kind of interesting. Cause I figured if I wanted to get into Walking Dead, I was considering doing what I did last year, which was waiting all day at Madison Square Garden.
Right.
You know, like getting there at like 10 a.m. or whatever, and just like staying there until like, you know, 9 p.m. when Walking Dead gets out, which is what I did last year. And it sucks. I mean, the Madison Square Garden panels are fun. Like that's where they have like the biggest stuff. So last year, I think I saw the Great Wall with Matt Damon and stuff. Didn't even know the movie. I just saw that panel. mostly what made it worth it for me last year was the John Wick 2 panel was there. And so that was pretty rad. And like Trollhunters was there. So like Guillermo del Toro was there, and then The Walking Dead and stuff. This year, they had a bunch of big panels there. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Star Trek Discovery, and The Walking Dead, and they were supposed to have The Punisher right before The Walking Dead, but that was canceled a couple of days earlier, so there was just kind of a gap in there, and nobody really knew what was going on until, like, Friday or Saturday when it was announced that Marvel was going to be screening an interview that Joe Quesada did with Stan Lee, like, that happened earlier this year. So what happened was kind of interesting. I decided that, you know, I probably wasn't going to wait around all day anyway because Ash vs. Evil Dead was on Saturday morning and I couldn't skip that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I figured I'm a hardcore Evil Dead fan. I'm going to go to that first and then maybe I'll pop over to Madison Square Garden and see what the situation is. And early in the morning, I get like a notification saying that like, you know, people are already lining up for Madison Square Garden panels. And I was like, well, okay, I'm probably not going to get in, so fuck it. I'm going to skip Madison Square Garden entirely. So I go to Ash vs. Evil Dead. Hardcore Evil Dead fan. I've attended that panel at New York Comic Con every year since the show has started. And it's currently entering its third season on Stars. And their first panel 2 years ago might be my favorite panel of the entire New York Comic Con experience that I've been there. It was incredible, man. So that one, Bruce Campbell, Lucy Lawless, Sam Raimi were all there. And they did the surprise world premiere of the very first episode of the series, which was directed by Sam Raimi, and it was amazing.
You were right. No more running.
It's good to see you, Jefe.
It's good to be back.
How does it feel?
Groovy.
The show isn't coming back until February this time around, so I wasn't entirely sure what we would see, but they surprised us yet again and screened the entire first episode of the upcoming season. So I won't go too much into spoilery-filled details of the new episode, but I will say that it is as goofy and gory as the show is at its best. And it continues to keep the spirit of Evil Dead alive in fun ways, and much of the new season seems like it will take place at Ash's old high school. And the show introduces a long-lost daughter for Ash as well, which will provide new dimensions to the Ash Williams character.
Ooh, interesting.
And then after the episode, the screening was followed by a Q&A with Bruce Campbell and the cast of the series, which includes Dana DeLorenzo and Ray Santiago and a couple of new actors as well. I have blanking on their names. And this was, as it is every year, just so much fun. Man, Bruce Campbell commands the stage at these events. He's just getting up. He gives fans money whenever they compliment him. Like, he just has, like, a bunch of, like, singles, like, ready to go for that kind of thing. He's just eager to crack jokes, and he's ready to speak, like, really intelligently should the situation arise. He gave, like, a great shout-out to Joseph DeLuca, who's the music supervisor for Ash vs. Evil Dead, who's been working on the series since the original movie. Like, he's been doing the music since way back when. And they were asked about the future of the show and what's going on. Apparently, Bruce Campbell seems to believe that it's uncertain at this time. Stars is kind of in flux at the moment because it was acquired by Lionsgate. So he was saying that, like, once the Lionsgate execs figure out which Stars execs they're going to fire,
then they'll know.
Yeah, then once they get all their shit sorted out, then they'll figure out whether the show will get a fourth season. I guess that's why it's being moved to February, because they think it's a more, like, a less competitive time for the show to premiere and stuff like that. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping for a fourth season because Ash vs. Evil Dead is one of the most fun shows on TV. So, yeah, that was the Ash vs. Evil Dead panel. Then I went back to the Javits Center, Mike. I was considering going to Madison Square Garden,
Right.
You know, check out the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel. And then I got that, like, notification saying, you know, like, it's too packed. And I was like, all right, never mind. I'll go.
Forget it.
I'll go to the Javits. And so I went to the Javits, and I got into a main stage panel. And this was one I was actually really excited about. I'm really glad I skipped Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to go to this. This one's called Twisted Tunes. And we talked a little bit about how much I like voice acting for the Terra Strong panel. This might be the most, like, straight-up fun panel the entire weekend. This was six iconic voice actors all in a room together doing a live reading of a classic movie script as their various characters from all
sorts of
movies.
That's the best premise for anything ever.
Yeah, so there was a viral video a few years ago. At least my friend showed it to me a while back, and then I showed it to a few people too. And it's a lot of voice
that
actors.
That counts as viral.
Yeah, and it's a bunch of voice actors reading Star Wars, doing the same thing, reading Star Wars. So that one was like John DiMaggio and Tom Kenny and stuff like that. You're hearing like Bender as Chewbacca and that kind of thing, and it's like it's fun, it's cool. And I knew it would be tough to pass up the chance to see them reading this time around because they were doing Ghostbusters. And
goddamn.
Yeah, so Troy Baker, Nolan North, Jess Harnell, Rob Paulsen, Tress McNeil, and Jim Cummings were our all-star voice cast, and they delivered big time. So Paulsen, Harnell, and McNeil are the original voices of the Animaniacs, all three of them, Yakko, Wango, and Dot. So that was what they started off with as the three Ghostbusters. Also, Jim Cummings plays Winnie the Pooh, and he did that as Sigourney Weaver's character for a while, and that was pretty great. Troy Baker did his Joker that he did in Arkham Origins, I think, is what it was.
Right.
And it kicked ass. It was so good. And the only one I can I have one complaint is that Nolan North did not do Nathan Drake.
I think that's just Nolan North's voice, though.
I guess, yeah. But he did show off what a phenomenal impressionist he is. He is like incredible at doing, like, cause a lot of times, like, they'll do like their voices from different things. Other times they'll just say like, "All right, you're Christopher Walken," and then you'll just do a Christopher Walken voice or something. His Gary Busey is out of control. Like, it's out of control. There was one moment where like, you know, he's just making like weird faces throughout the entire time, and like he's reading the script and like he forgets like. I don't know if he intentionally forgot where his place was or whatever, but somebody like patted him on the back and a bunch of water spilled out of his mouth while he was giving abuse. He was pretty wild. Troy Baker's Matthew McConaughey also was pretty amazing too. He's just like leaning back further and further into his chair and his hat's like coming down and further and further as he's talking. It was great. It was a phenomenal panel. And Rob Paulsen, you know, he did Pinky. He did a bunch of other voices. It ended with a couple of Rick and Morty voices. Rob Paulsen played Snowball, the dog on Rick and Morty, and Jess Harnell played a Scary Terry. It ended the panel so well because the last line of the last scene that they did was "We're the Ghostbusters," and Jess Harnell as Scary Terry is like, "We're the Ghostbusters, bitch." It was so good. And Tress McNeil as well. I mean, she does a bunch of voices on The Simpsons, so that was pretty exciting for me. She did Miss Springfield. She did Skinner's Mom. She also did a couple of Futurama voices. She did Mom from Futurama and a bunch of those. So, yeah, just a phenomenal panel. Yeah, a lot of the videos are online on YouTube. I recommend checking those out. I guess they basically – Twisted Tunes is the thing where they go to different Comic-Cons and just do this. Like they pick a different movie script and do it. So recommend checking all that out, especially if you're a voice acting geek, because it is a ton of fun. And it also like helps show off the talents of these actors who are very rarely kind of in the spotlight in this way.
Yeah.
Like you see like the amount of variety that these guys are capable of. And it's like, holy shit, like this is kind of amazing. But anyway, yeah, that's the Twisted Tunes panel. And then okay, so here's what I did. Got out of Twisted Tunes. And was like, you know what? There's not that much going on at the Javits right now. Archer is going on at Hammerstein Ballroom. I'll use that as a fallback, but I might as well go check out Madison Square Garden. Just see what's going on.
You never know.
I walked right in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's no line in Madison Square Garden. And I guess here's what happened. So, Star Trek Discovery was like around 3-ish. The Punisher was supposed to be around 5-ish, and Walking Dead was around 7-ish. Punisher was canceled. And so I think what happened, I think a lot of the Walking Dead fans, I think there is a lot of overlap between Walking Dead and Punisher fans. So they probably, I think more people would have camped out all day to get into both of those panels. Right. But when Punisher was canceled, I think a lot of people were like, well, it's not really worth it anymore. I'll try my luck later on in the day. And so what happened was, it was a lot of Trekkies who were there early in the morning. And then once Star Trek happened, a lot of them left. And so,
right.
And so I got in at the tail end of the Star Trek panel and was just like, all right, here we are. I got into this. I got to see what Marvel had instead of the Punisher panel, which was the interview with Stan Lee. And so, yeah, that was a, Stan Lee wasn't physically there, but it was just like a screening of an interview that Joe Quesada, who is the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, I believe is his title, he did a few months ago at the Paley Center in Los Angeles. And it was cool. It kind of goes through all of Stan Lee's life, the early history of Marvel and stuff, and it's mostly stuff that I already knew, but like it was still cool to just see Stan Lee talking about it. And then after that, Joe Quesada came out and was talking and did like a short Q&A, and people were assholes, and it was a lot of fun. there was one guy who like comes up to the Q&A and he's like, so how do we deal with like the Santa Clausification of Stan Lee? And Joe Quesada's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
What?
He's like, oh, you know, Stan Lee is, you know, people look at him as like this hero, but like, you know, he fought with Jack Kirby and he fought with these people. It's like, dude, you're at a panel about Stan Lee. Shut the fuck up.
That's the most Comic-Con. Well, that's the most New York Comic-Con thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. So, yeah, that happened. But, and the Q&A was pretty brief and it was mostly just to get to the Walking Dead panel. Right. And the Walking Dead panel happened, man. So the build up to it was pretty great. So I'll back up a little bit. As you know, I'm pretty hit or miss on the Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. We've been over this before.
And especially, I think this last season was like mostly terrible, like pretty much mostly garbage. And so I was pretty like trepidatious about this panel going in, but the enthusiasm that people have for it is kind of infectious when you're there. So I was kind of excited to see what was going on. Like people, they had like, you know, the DJs like getting people hyped up for the show. They had everybody dressed up as Negan come out on stage, and then had them all do a dance contest to the song Easy Street, which was a pretty big song in this past season of Walking Dead. We're on Easy Street.
Okay.
And so it was fun. It was cool. And then, yeah, the Walking Dead panel happens, right? And finally, like, it's the biggest panel at New York Comic Con. Like, truly it is. Like,
yeah.
It's huge. It's the Saturday night panel at Madison Square Garden. Like, it is massive. And some of the cast were there. Key members of the crew were also there. Robert Kirkman was there. Greg Nicotero, who's the guy who I geek out about when when he shows up. Gail-Ann Hurd. Andrew Lincoln was there. Norman Reedus. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Lenny James, and Melissa McBride. And also the girl who plays Enid was there, who is Carl's girlfriend. How far did you get in the...
I was like halfway through season six.
Okay, so you probably saw her, but you don't remember.
Probably.
There's the guy who played Jesus was there, and there's a couple other people that were there, too. And I'll admit, yeah, I've been pretty down on The Walking Dead for this past season, but this panel did a lot to make me kind of hopeful for the show's future. In a weird way. So yeah, first off, the show is about to hit the 100th episode mark,
wow,
which is pretty insane and increasingly kind of rare in a TV landscape of 10 or 13 episode seasons. So they spend a lot of time like thanking the fans. They showed a clip from the 100th episode, which I believe is the premiere episode, which does something pretty interesting. It's a direct recreation of a scene from the show's pilot episode. So yeah, and I won't say which scene for spoiler reasons, but you know, Greg Nicotero did mention that the 100th episode will be filled with recreations and homages to the show's past, and should be a pretty interesting watch for hardcore Walking Dead fans. So there is that. And then on the news front, panel was fairly light. I mean, outside of these small teases for where a couple of characters may be headed this season, like Lincoln said something that to me was pretty reassuring, which was that the show is more quickly paced this time around.
Oh, thank fuck. That's my biggest complaint about that show.
Yeah, and this show is always at its best when it is burning through story, right? That's when it's like always, like I'm always into it when it's like, oh yeah, shit, things are happening every 5 minutes and it's awesome, because I don't care about these characters at all. I just want to see like crazy shit go down on this show. And it hasn't really burned through story in a long time, so pretty eager to get into that. And then Kirkman also revealed that there would be some kind of crossover between The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead. But he would not reveal who would be crossing over, how it would happen, or even which show is crossing over to the other one. So there's no information to go on other than it will happen at some point this coming season. So my guess is that it happens on Fear the Walking Dead, because I don't think there are Fear the Walking Dead characters that are notable enough to show up on The Walking Dead
for anyone to care about that show.
Yeah, because I stopped watching Fear the Walking Dead like after the second season premiere. I think like I was pretty much out. And I'm pretty sure it's like in season three now, or it finished season three, something like that. So it's been going for a while, and I don't care about it, and I think most people don't. But if a Walking Dead character shows up on Fear the Walking Dead, people would care about that, right? That would be, especially if it's a character who has already died on The Walking Dead, because Fear the Walking Dead is a prequel, so it could happen.
Right, that's true.
So if, like, Abraham showed up and it was like, hey, it's Abraham, our old friend. And so, like, sure, why not? Sure. Yeah, so that is the Walking Dead panel. And I guess that about wraps up my time at New York Comic Con, Mike. After that, I got on the subway, got incredibly sick, and here we are now.
All right. Well, that is a... It seems almost like this year was light on reveals or announcements or anything like that. It seemed kind of more, you know, I guess it's what Comic-Con is for. Fan service-y, cool, show off some new stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Type deals.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, there is, like, you know, a couple of news announcements and stuff like that. But mostly, I feel like New York Comic-Con isn't really the news Comic-Con.
Yeah.
You know, San Diego Comic-Con is where, like, announcements happen and stuff like that. But New York Comic-Con, I don't know. I feel like... at the end of the day, we are still like the redheaded stepbrother of San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah, we do happen at the towards the end of the year. You know, San Diego Comic Con's in May, I think, or something like that, or
right.
June. No, what is? I don't even remember.
That's in July.
It's July.
But San Diego is also the one with like the biggest panel. Like that's where like
yeah.
you know Warner Brothers comes out with their movies, and Marvel has their panel, and it's like you know I'm always surprised Marvel doesn't like there isn't more at New York Comic Con like that. Because I mean, this has grown so much over the course of just the 4 years that I've been doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure, like, when I was first there, or, like, the year before I went, Marvel did have a panel there. So I don't know why there isn't, like, a Marvel Movies panel or, like, a you know, something like that, but...
I wonder if that's a result of Disney having their, what is it, D23 or whatever they do, their own Disney con, basically.
Right. yeah, and when they do that, they usually skip San Diego Comic Con, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, even
so
though...
who knows?
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so New York Comic Con, you know, it was a fun time. It was a good Comic Con experience. You know, I think overall, like me being sick towards the end, kind of put a damper on the whole.
kind yeah,
of a damper
you missed out on Sunday. That's okay. Don't worry. Yeah,
but Sunday didn't really have like a ton of stuff that I was really that interested in anyway. I think it was like the X-Files that day, which is a show I don't watch. So, you know, I mean, I would like to watch the X-Files, but I just haven't gotten around to it. And
yeah,
you know,
that's fair.
Like, what's the point of like I was already an outsider on the Peter Capaldi thing, so it's like, what's
yeah? Why go into that too?
Yeah, and there was like The Gifted had a panel on Sunday, which is like a show that I'm interested in. It just started on Fox, and I think they were screening episode 2, but I had not watched episode 1 by the time it started. So I was so I was like, ah, whatever. And then there was the Warner Brothers TV takeover of Comic-Con, so there was, like, it would just be a couple of different shows, so, like, Gotham and Blindspot and stuff like that.
Oh, right.
And I'm not suffering through Gotham anymore. That's a...
proud of you, Mike.
That's a hard line in the sand that I've drawn for myself, so... never again.
all right, that wraps up our Comic-Con wrap-up episode.
Yeah, that wraps up the wrap-up.
Yeah. I don't have your copy in front of me of what you say at the end of episodes, so
yes,
I can't
why.
Do it.
Neither do I, so... Let's see if I can do it from memory. Shoot us an email, podcast@filmbook.com, right? That's one of them. Subscribe to
uh-huh.
iTunes, rate us 5 stars, all that stuff, all that jazz. What else do we say? Patreon campaign, patreon.com/filmbook, go to that. And what are we doing next time, Mike? Well, let's, what else do we say? where can we follow you? Where can I follow you on the internet this week, Mike?
You can follow me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, that's the hint that I like Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
My friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can follow me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Also do some work for crookedmarquee.com and the radio stations WPDH and WRVM there as well. So that about wraps up our New York Comic Con episode. So we got to figure out what our schedule is for the upcoming weeks, Mike, because I do
yes.
want to do a Blade Runner episode.
Yeah, we're going to be late on that one. But
yeah, but so that's got to happen at some point. So hopefully that can happen like this week or next week. We got to do our Wicker Man episode for a complete
yes.
week.
I think maybe possibly Wicker Man focus, and then we could split Blade Runner and whatever the next big movie out is in one episode.
Maybe.
Do you want to do that? Forgo discussions, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. We'll figure it out. But so I guess the Wicker Man should be our next thing, right? Since we don't have a ton of time to... Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. We were just both ravaged by illness lately. So, so through our...
Ravaged by illness and work and things like of that nature, so... Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Stay tuned, because we don't know either.
Yes, just subscribe to both of our podcasts, so as soon as they show up, you will get them. That is basically sure. the ending to that whole thing. Mike, we this has gone off the rails. We need to end this. why don't you wrap this up?
Thanks so much for listening. We are out.
Boom.
Hey, I got that from Comic-Con. Stay away from my priceless, useless crap from Comic-Con. Geeks might seem nice, but they're really quite ruthless. All that they want is the head of George Lucas. See the Twi-Hards and Harry Potter minions fight like they're Israelis and Palestinians. Fat fans keep nukes for Joel Schumacher handy. Aside from that, they're one big happy family.
Play a big fanish here, come on. So get packing. Get the fracking. To the blogger, hacking movie industry, tracking antiperspirant, lacking $50, snacking at another Comic-Con, unless you watch it online.